When you do the two intervals at the end of the workout, the perceived effort is way harder. Like, you might be able to be within 5% of your original numbers, but the perceived effort is way more than 5%. It's like they hurt. Like, you can do it, but it hurts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast, powered by Ignition Coach Co. I'm your host, Adam Saban, and on this week's show, we're talking about how to maximize your time when training at altitude for short stints, as well as ways to fine-tune your fitness to help avoid blowing up during marathon mountain bike races such as the Ward Eddy race down in Kentucky. Today's show is also brought to you by Flow Formulas. A few of us from Ignition will be down at Mid-South Gravel this weekend, and you can rest assured knowing that we'll all be consuming absorbent amounts of Flow Formulas during the event. Get on top of your nutrition game now by heading over to flowformulas.com and make sure to use the discount code MATCHBOX when checking out. As always, if you like what you hear, please share this with your friends and leave us a five-star review. And if you have any questions for the show, you can drop us an email at matchboxpod@gmail.com with email title The Matchbox Podcast, or you can head over to ignitioncoachco.com and fill out the Matchbox Podcast listener question form. And if you too will be at Mid-South this weekend, come find us at booth 42 and give us a shout. All right, let's get into it. Okay, Drew, this first question is kind of geared towards you because you have some context here. So I thought it was from Gary, but sounds like it's actually Ricky Dale Earnhardt here. He says, what's up? Masters athlete, Cat 7, all around, fun having cyclists from the bluegrass state.
All right.
That's your state, dude.
My God. Yeah, come on. Bluegrass state. That's obviously Kentucky. Come on.
War Daddy is my A event this year, or every year. My goal is always to improve upon my time from the previous year. I know that Drew has raced the event in early years, so he understands that it's a 68-mile double track and gravel off-road event with roughly 8,000 feet of climbing, with most climbs being in the 10 to 15-minute range for me. Yeah, Drew and Schwarm are doing these climbs in 5 minutes, but that's out of my league.
Dylan knows Schwarm.
He's a guy.
He's a legend. Yeah. Brian Schwarm. Okay. He's like a mountain bike, endurance mountain bike legend from Kentucky.
It's the king of Kentucky.
Yeah.
King of Kentucky.
What does that mean?
I thought that was
the jester.
The prince. Or
what's the guy that just dances for the king?
Yeah. I guess the jester.
Yeah.
So my question is, with this style of event, would someone like me, who is essentially at the beginner level or below with an FTP of 265 at around 2.8 watts per kilo, would I be better to work on increasing my FTP after base season or work on my ability to ride at a higher percentage of my FTP for a longer period of time? With my current fitness level, I'm going above threshold on every climb simply due to my low FTP and the gradient of these climbs. I imagine raising FTP or increasing the time at sub-FTP may go hand in hand. Just looking for any advice for a master's athlete. Love the podcast and appreciate the advice that y'all give. Just for additional input, I'm currently doing base work at zone 2 with some sweet spot work thrown in, and War Daddy comes at the end of April. So right now, about 7 weeks out.
Yeah. Ricky Dale, yes and yes. You should raise your FTP. And you should be able to ride at a higher percent of your FTP. I mean, both of those things are good, right? I think I'd say probably all of us are trying to do both of those things right now with our training. Like, I want my FTP to go up and I want to ride at a higher percentage of that. That race is hard because the climbs are so steep. And so, like he said, a lot of times on the climbs, you have to hold a higher power. I don't really even know what the training would look like different from either one of those two things, like trying to raise your FTP or trying to ride at a higher percentage. Like, the workouts that you're going to be doing to accomplish those two things, are going to be a lot of the same workouts, I would imagine. A lot of threshold workouts, and some maybe like over unders thrown in there as well. And I think when you do both, like do those types of workouts, you're effectively improving both of those things. Your FTP will slowly start to increase, and you can do that for longer. I think maybe for a really long race like that, you know, you're looking at like, I think, I don't, I don't, 68 miles doesn't sound like that long, but with all the climbing, I'm pretty sure it took like over 4 hours when I did it, which means even longer for, you know, everybody else doing it. so maybe you're looking at like a 5 hour, 6 hour race. I don't know. Like, because the climbs are so steep, the speed variation is huge. And so, yeah, I'm sure guys were out there for a long time. I mean, I felt like I was out there for a long time. And so you need to be able to like handle a lot of threshold because of all the climbing. And so some workouts you do to push the power, like I want to see a higher power during each interval for threshold, but then some workouts you do where I want to see more time in zone. And so I would probably experiment with that, with the time and zone focus of trying to increase the amount of time that you're spending in your threshold zone. So like if you're only doing like 3x15s or something in threshold, maybe you can push that to 4x15s and then 5x15s. So you know what I mean? Like trying to increase how much threshold you can tolerate in one bout and building that up throughout a block, I think would be probably a good strategy for a race like that. But you guys are welcome to, just because I've done it doesn't mean you guys can't
talk about it. So the one thing that I would say here is what can be challenging for your everyday athlete is they might not have enough time to train that 5x15, you know, to work up to that.
Take time. Yeah.
You know, even a 3x15, I mean, you're looking at probably an hour and a half minimum to be able to do that workout effectively. And that's a lot of, I mean, that's a lot of time for most people. Most people aren't going to be able to fit in an hour and a half workout except for the weekends, you know, so maybe you can do that on the weekends. So I would almost consider like coming at it from both ends, where maybe your midweek workout that you're doing, you know, high intensity interval session, maybe you're truncating the duration, but trying to peg above, spend more time just above threshold. So, you know, you're doing 4x6 or 4x8, like high threshold, just so that way the workout's short, you know, like you can knock that workout out in an hour. But then on the weekend, you could use that weekend workout to try and increase the time in zone. Cause I do agree, like for the longer the race is with this much climbing, like you need to be able to handle, you need to increase like your work capacity at threshold basically. So, it sounds like, Ricky Dale here spends time even above threshold on some of these climbs, you know? So I kind of like the idea of doing like the over unders, you know, mixed in there. But that's when you're trying to increase the total time spent in zone when you have, you know, more than an hour to work with during the week.
I feel like the basis of his question, if we could make it more general for the whole audience, that's, I'm sure not everyone listening is going to do War Daddy.
Should
you focus on, for example, like, should you focus on just threshold, or if you're raising your fitness level, does the whole power duration curve goes up? And the second one is true. If you're raising your fitness level, the entire power duration curve goes up. So your FTP goes up, your 5 hour power goes up, your 5 minute power goes up. That being said, you can train specific parts of the power duration curve to be maybe slightly higher than they otherwise would have been if you didn't, you know, specifically do intervals targeting those systems. So for example, you could raise your entire power duration curve, meaning power at all durations, but you could do a ton of 5 minute intervals, and then maybe your 5 minute power would be slightly higher than it otherwise would have been had you not focused so hard on 5 minute intervals. So I think that applies to this person and applies to anybody who's training for a specific race. I would try to look at what zone you're going to be at during the important parts of the race. For this person, the important parts of the race are these really nasty steep climbs, and try to see if you can target those specific intensities.
Yeah, he said, did he say 10 to 15 minutes were most of the climb? That's how long it took. Yeah.
Yep. And then because of his fitness level relative to the gradient of the climbs, He's going above threshold on every climb. Probably not the whole time, but you know he's having a punch above threshold on each of these climbs.
Yeah, sure, that's accurate. Blaine, you got anything to add? Oh yeah, by the way, we got a new guy on the podcast this week.
I don't know. I've been on here once before.
Oh, you have? Oh, yeah,
long
yeah.
time ago. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Blaine is back. Blaine Maddox. Yep. This is Caitlin's husband, for those of you who are regular listeners. He's filling in.
Yep. No, I don't have much to add. I definitely agree with all you guys said. One thing that I do with a lot of my athletes that are training for events like this is on the weekends when they have time to do longer rides, I'll give them like a 2x something threshold in the first hour and then have them do 2 hours at endurance and then have them do another 2x something at threshold at the end. And one, a lot of them like that, but that kind of gives you that fatigue resistance training, you know, where you're kind of breaking down those muscle fibers early on. And then you're spending a lot of time at zone two, you know, true zone two, kind of burning through some energy. And then if you fueled right, you should be, you know, hopefully within 5% of that same power for the end of the ride threshold. And that seems to work really well with gaining not just like your threshold fitness, you know, but your 4 hour power type stuff, you know, goes right along with that. And I've had good success personally and with my athletes there.
I think those workouts are good for confidence building too. You know, the fact that because a lot of times athletes are either too reserved in the beginning because they're nervous about not being able to sustain the effort later on, or they're just like, they don't understand that they can, you know, do those efforts later on, regardless of what the beginning of the race looks like, you know? So I think those are good for confidence building. You have to be careful that it doesn't cause the athlete to be overconfident, you know, and then they go to the race and they're, you know, doing VO2 max for 10 minutes at the, you know, beginning of the race. But I do think it also holds the athlete accountable for their nutrition training or nutrition in their training, because like you mentioned, as long as they're fueling well, they should be able to feel fairly good. So at the end, you know, based on what their conditioning level is, whereas if they mess up their fueling, then it's going to go south towards the end.
Definitely. My favorite thing about those kinds of workouts is like when you do the two intervals at the end of the workout, the perceived effort is way harder. Like you might be able to be within 5% of your original numbers, but the perceived effort is way more than 5%. It's like they hurt. Like you can do it, but it hurts. You know what I mean? And I think
you love that.
I love that. Like those workouts are the ones that I'm like, I need more of this. Like when I'm in the middle of an interval and I'm like, this sucks. That's the best. Like training that when you're thinking that in the middle of an interval, like I can do this, but it sucks. You're probably in a good spot.
Yeah. Blaine, what you're describing is kind of what is getting super popular amongst, professional cyclists right now, which is the concept of durability. There's been a lot of talk about durability recently because it's arguably, you know, FTP is such a, it's like the measuring stick to compare one rider to another, but FTP is always your fresh FTP. Or, you know, maybe if we're talking about 5 minute power, we're talking about your fresh 5 minute power. But arguably what's way more important than that for actually doing well in a race is what is your 5 minute power after 4 hours of riding, or what is your FTP after 4 hours of riding? Cause it changes because you get fatigued. And that's kind of what durability is. Are you able to sustain that high power output very late into a race? And some people might think, if you're fitter and you have a higher FTP, then obviously your durability is going to be higher. But there are cases where people have a high FTP, but they don't have a high FTP after 5 hours of riding. Or there are people that have a decent FTP, but it's not that high, but their durability is really good. So after 5 hours of riding, they're going to be the ones who win the race, even though if everyone was fresh, they wouldn't have the highest number.
Right. I wish there was like a standardized test for durability. Like, it would be easy to implement one, like burn 3,000 kilojoules and then do a 10 minute or 20 minute test. But like, that's not as standard as your typical 20-minute test, because I feel like my 20-minute power, my FTP, like, hasn't really, it's been basically the same for a while now. And if it's going up, it's barely going up. But my durability, I feel like that has gone up quite a bit the last 5 years. But if I had been like doing some kind of test to measure that, it would be interesting to see the progress. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I feel like my durability is getting better, but there's no standardized test to it. So like, I don't really know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why you see so many, you know, guys and gals later in life still flying. It's not because they're getting fitter. It's, you know, they're getting more efficient. They're getting, you know, they're gaining the durability, they've got more experience. So, I mean, like all the, you know, combined, like a guy like Jeremiah Bishop is not like, there's no way he's putting out the same numbers that he was in his prime 10 years ago.
Todd Wells
crocking top 10 at BWR Arizona this weekend. He beat Alexi Vermeulen, and Alexi Vermeulen was second place in the lifetime GP last year. Like,
right.
Dude's a legend.
Mm-hmm. Your durability goes up with age if you're training, right? So the more training years you have under your legs, generally speaking, your durability goes up. And the person that I was describing who has a high fresh FTP but doesn't have good durability, a lot of times that's junior racers, younger or U23 racers.
Yeah.
Yep.
One more comment on the War Daddy. Most races, you know, like might start with like a shotgun, like a person on the sideline, and they shoot the shotgun, and then that's the race start. The year I did it,
races in Kentucky start like that.
yeah, but like the gun is a normal thing. You watch the Tour de France; every stage starts with a gunshot.
True,
right? Well, in Kentucky, at the War Daddy, they start with a shotgun, but it's not the shot. It's not your standard shotgun. It's this redneck guy cracking the bottom of a Bud Light and chugging it and shotgunning that. And then after he does that, that's the start of the race. And it's at like 8 a.m. in the morning.
That's so nice. Funny. It's there. The race up in North Dakota that I've done the last few years, the Nepomuk Gnarly that Dylan, apparently you're going to this year.
I am. What?
That's what I heard. That's the rumor on the streets. But
okay. I didn't even hear that rumor.
They advertise that it's a cannon start. So the first year I did it, I was like, oh, this is going to be so sick. They're going to blow off a cannon. Like, of course they are. It's like middle of nowhere, North Dakota, like, got nothing to worry about. And then 7 a.m. goes off, and it's, you know, I guess the race start, and they start playing cannon on the church bells,
like the
classical song. And I was utterly disappointed.
Oh, bummer. That's pretty good, though.
They got me, though, for sure. Yeah.
Good twist.
Okay, we got one more question here. It's a lengthy question, so bear with me here, but I think it's a good one. So this one comes from Andrew. Andrew says, I'm an educator married to an educator who is lucky enough to spend roughly 31 days each summer at altitude with our family of five. I won't mention the location of the best place to mountain bike in the lower 48, where most rides route between 9,000 to 11,000 feet and sometimes above 12,000 feet. And over the course of a month, you can barely ride what is available from town. Then turns hat backwards because some self-proclaimed mountain bike capital of the world would get offended. Nice. Anyway, I do train for mountain bike races ranging from local 1 hour cross country races to bigger 3+ hour endurance off-road races. These all generally take place around 1000 feet in elevation, so pretty close to sea level. I look to race about 10 events from May through October, with the time at elevation being from mid-June to mid-July. My question is this: how do I best utilize my time at and above 9,000 feet as a 42-year-old guy who likes to get competitive in the local scene? Elite entry is generally in the Midwest scene for what that is worth, middle of the pack elite finisher guy for the bigger events. I have about 12 to 15 hours a week to ride while at elevation. Ride 8 to 10 hours a week normally. In the past, I just kind of burn out at elevation, but it is so enjoyable, I try not to pass up the opportunity to ride every day while I'm there. I have a great endurance, I have great endurance when I'm back in the Midwest, but absolutely horrendous top end power for the 2-ish hour races and less mountain bike and less 2 hour and less mountain bike races I enter. So he's talking like cross country races there. It's as if I can only put out the gas on the pedal three quarters of the way. Usually around late October, I peak with literally no events to show for it. I would like to feel faster, quicker upon returning from elevation. Do I need to suck it up and go deeper into the pain cave with heavy interval sessions right away? Do I dial effort way back for an entire month at elevation? I also cannot sleep very high, or I cannot sleep high and train low due to the family and the location that we stay. What would you do to maximize both ride time, world-class trails, and fitness at elevation to return in decent form for 3 months of racing, basically in the 1 to 3 hour cross-country style races? Dylan, you were awesome. It was a pleasure to meet you at Schwam again this year. Thanks in advance. Feel free to ask for clarification. We didn't do that, so
man, skip that part. No clarification needed. We need to put a word count on these questions.
Yeah.
Dang, that was a long one. That was a chapter.
I felt like I needed to read all of it to get
I don't even know the question. There's so many words. I'm just overwhelmed.
For anyone, I mean, just kind of blanket generally here. I don't want to say force, like if you have the opportunity to go to high altitude in the summertime, what's the best way to utilize that time there to better your fitness upon returning to sea level?
I will say that it's interesting. It is interesting that this guy tends to peak in October with no races to show for it. That I would say if people mistime their peak, that's the opposite of what they usually do. Usually they peak in, I don't know, March and have no races to show for it.
Well, I'm guessing here he says he does all of his racing between May and October. So I'm guessing what's happening is he's coming back from altitude. He's probably burnt out, like he said, from all the high altitude riding. And then he goes on and races cross country events for three more months. And I'm just guessing that by the end of the season, from all the high intensity racing, he's like finally coming into form.
Yeah. So I notice a couple of glaring red flags here. This person has way
Dylan's about to rip this guy to pieces.
this person has way more time to train when they're at altitude than when they're at sea level, which, you know, is understandable from a life scheduling standpoint, but it's probably the opposite of what you would want to do for your training. You don't want to do a higher training load than you're used to when you go to altitude, because altitude is already an added stress on your body. And then you're adding more stress than you're used to by having your training load be higher than it usually is. So, I mean, if there is a way for you to build up a big enough base and have big enough weeks under your legs before going to altitude that you're already used to the volume that you're able to hit when you're at altitude, that is definitely preferable, because, you know, if you're doing 10 to 12 hour weeks at sea level and then you go to altitude and you're doing an 18 hour weeks because you got a bunch of time and the trails are so amazing and the weather's so amazing, it doesn't shock me at all that you're getting burnt out at altitude. The other thing that I heard was, the trails are so amazing, so I try to get out every day.
Mm-hmm.
Huge mistake. One of my biggest pet peeves is, honestly, is when somebody says something like, oh, my uncle, it doesn't have to be their uncle, but it's usually their uncle is so dedicated to training. Like he'll run 3 miles every morning. Like he never skips a morning. Every morning he's out the door running 3 miles. And look, if you're not training that hard and this is just a routine to, and you're not even really an athlete, like this is just a routine to kind of get your day going, okay, that's fine. But from a training standpoint, that's the worst training I could think of. You're doing the same thing every single day with no rest days and no progressive overload. I'm not suggesting that's what you're doing, but you absolutely need rest days just in general where you're not doing anything, or at the very least, maybe doing a 1 hour very easy recovery ride, or less than an hour, maybe 30 minutes. But especially if you're going from low altitude to high altitude, again, more stress on the body, you should absolutely be having days where you're not doing anything. And I know that's going to be hard to do because you're in this cycling paradise at high altitude, and the weather's amazing and the trails are right out the door and you want to hit them, but you gotta force yourself to take rest days.
You said this guy was going to Colorado and that's his destination. Was that what he said?
He keeps it a secret.
I think so.
But he does allude to the fact that he's staying at 9,000 feet and rides up to 12,000 feet.
He's for sure in Breckenridge. There's nowhere else in Colorado that you can get that. And like, that is cycling paradise. So we spent about a month there last year. And I mean, it's for sure, like, the trail riding is incredible. And I went through kind of the same thing, that went there and did a lot of training and kind of like got into this hole. And like, looking back, like figuring out what happened, I wasn't eating enough, just because you're at such an altitude that like your appetite is kind of suppressed. So if he's finding that he's regularly struggling to train, I would like look at not just your training load and volume, but how much are you eating on and off the bike. If you're under fueling outside of that, your body's going to struggle to recover, you know, regardless of where you're at, especially there, appetite being suppressed. So I would look at that. But I also know that you can drive like an hour 15 towards Golden, and it's like 6,000 feet. You know, I know we can't live high, train low every day, but if you can squeak that in once a week, like, you're going to feel a difference going down and like, excuse me, doing your interval sessions there. I would say if you can swing that, that would be pretty good. Like, as just some practical stuff.
Yeah. And there's plenty of fun stuff to do in the Front Range too. You know, like you're mentioning, if one day a week, bring the family down. And if that's going to be like your hit session, like, make it an hour and a half. Like, it doesn't have to be a long session. Try and get that high quality in. And that's what I was going to say too, kind of piggybacking off of what Dylan said, was, you know, you have to, if coming out of this, like, I'm guessing the reason you send this question is because you're frustrated with the fact that you get to go to this sick place, you get to do all this awesome riding, but you come away feeling so flat and, you know, relatively unfit to where you want to be, that's not your preference, right? Like, you're not just going there to have a fun time. Like, you also want to get quality training in. And as such, you have to think about it in terms of quality over quantity. So like Dylan, you know, like you mentioned, like, you can't just expect to train every single day for 5 weeks straight. And I'm guessing if he wants to ride every single day, he also doesn't want to take a rest week, which goes against what we would all recommend here too. You know, if you're there for 5 weeks, maybe you do, you know, 3 weeks on, 1 week off, and then do a, you know, block week or something, or just have a normal week. I mean, it could be whatever, but as far as like those days that you, like, let's just say you can't get down, we don't know, maybe he's not in Breckenridge, maybe he's somewhere where it's a 5 hour drive to get to the nearest 5,000 foot elevation, I don't know, but you know, if you can't and you have to do your workouts at 9,000 feet, I think what you have to do is just shorten your intervals. You know, like, you have to, instead of trying to do 3 by 12 minutes at threshold, which you're not going to be able to do at threshold power sea level, you know, like, you do 6 by 6 minute threshold where you can actually hit some higher numbers, because what's probably happening is your legs just aren't used to producing the force that they need to, like, when you go down to sea level and you're doing cross country racing. Like, that's a huge difference. You're going from 9,000 plus feet of training to not just sea level, but now you're introducing cross country racing, which is one of the highest demanding forms of racing there is, you know, at least in the endurance side of things. So you're like, the force load that your legs have to accommodate is just so vastly different than what you're able to produce, or probably what you're doing at 9,000 feet. You have to figure out a way to like still induce that, even though, like, if the power might not be less, like, you're not going to do 4 minute power for 4 minutes at elevation, but maybe you could do your 15 minute power for 4 minutes. You know what I'm saying? So like, that'd be the approach that I would do, is like almost cut your interval time in half and like double the amount of reps you do, and then try and hit a little bit harder efforts. And I don't know if I would do that for 5 weeks though. I mean, that'd be like maybe the final 2 or 3 weeks before coming down. Like to do that kind of training, like, you know, you're basically kind of doing VO2 max training at that point. To do that at altitude for an entire 5 week block, you know, or 4 weeks, even if you take a rest week, that could be really taxing too. And you're probably also not going to want to do 15 hours a week when you're doing that.
You think it makes sense for this guy to do a mid-season break the week after he gets back from elevation? Because if he's going to have accumulated all this extra stress from not only riding more, but also being at altitude.
Sure.
That seems like the optimal time to do a mid-season break. Like, not just one rest week, but maybe like a whole week off and a rest week. Just to make sure.
Or do a mid-season break for a week while you're out there. You know, like take a week off the bike while you're out there and do some other fun stuff in the mountains. Like there's, and that was going to be my other suggestion is like, you've got to find other things that entertain you than just riding. Cause I know it's like, there's sick trails, there's, you know, sick routes to ride every single day, but there's also other fun stuff to do. Like you're there with your family, you know, you're in this beautiful mountainous place that's so much different than what you're used to in the Midwest. Like, maybe you take a week where you just take the, you know, put the bike away and you do other stuff. And that should also coincide with your weekly routine too. Like, you know, every third day, find something else to do that's fun in the mountains that you look forward to. I find like that's the best way to induce recovery into normal training. And then especially something like this, like you have to have something that you look forward to, because otherwise like you just feel like you're missing out when you don't go out and ride your bike on sick trails. So you have to have something that's like, I can't wait for that third day to come around because I really want to do that other thing. And don't make that other thing super strenuous either, because that kind of defeats the purpose of those recovery days. But, you know, it could be active recovery. Hiking would be fine. Maybe there's like, I don't know, rock climbing. I mean, like it could be something that you're still being physically active if you want it to be, but not as strenuous aerobically.
I would suggest too that if, you know, if you're going to make one of these 5 weeks an easy week, which we would recommend, it's probably not a bad idea to make it the first week you're there. So a lot of people, when they go to altitude for long periods of time, they do give themselves a little bit of time to acclimate before they start training hard.
Yeah.
And during that acclimation process, they're not going crazy with the volume or the intensity. They're just letting their body acclimate. And then once they've acclimated, then they start ramping up the training.
Yeah. So, and here's what I actually really like about that is they mentioned that they're going to altitude from mid June to mid July. They're an educator. So I would assume, coming from the Midwest, I would assume they probably have 2 weeks between when school gets out and when that vacation starts. So like maybe you use those 2 weeks to get some higher volume training in, then you take that recovery week, the first week you get out there. You know, I like that, because then it gives you that chance to build into the little bit higher volume too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, Andrew, hopefully this works out for you. Let us know. That's it. That's all we got. Thanks for coming on, Blaine.
Sweet.
Yeah. Happy to.
We'll have you back on probably in a couple weeks when we do our cold plunge episode.
I'll get some plunging in.
I'm putting it on the air right now because I'm going to hold Dizzle to doing the cold plunge.
I've done it once. I haven't been motivated enough to do it since then.
We should do the podcast from our cold plunges.
Oh, nice.
All right, sweet. Thanks, guys. We'll see you later.
All right, see ya.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in for the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast. Like I said at the beginning, you can send any questions or topic suggestions to matchboxpod@gmail.com with email titled The Matchbox Podcast. Links to each of our social media pages can be found in the show notes. Tune in next week for another endurance training-related discussion and learn more about how you can find that extra match for your next big event. Catch y'all soon. Let's go!
Can I trust my coach? That's a good question. And we believe that you should totally be asking that question if you're working with a coach. And when it comes to the coaches at Ignition Coach Co., I like to say the proof is in the pudding. Every single one of our coaches has high levels of racing experience. Or in other words, our coaches are fast. And if they're fast, then they can make you fast too. I mean, come on. Who do you want to be your coach? The guy with a clipboard on the sidelines, or the guy with his hands in the air crossing the finish line? I don't know about you, but I'm going with the winner.
Sign up for coaching today at ignitioncoachco.com.